What Systems Are For. Watching a lot of Jordan Peterson's lectures on YouTube got me thinking along these lines. As I've said, a society or a system is optimistically set up and is meant to take care of everyone and everything and to cover pretty much all eventualities. It's a human construct designed to bring order and keep out chaos. But systems don't often really grow, adapt, and change like they need to. History is a long story of a series of systems and societies needing to change and refusing or being unable to do so. They are, therefore, overthrown, conquered, abandoned, or they simply fall apart into chaos. Every single empire there ever was eventually fell back into chaos. Now, chaos was what they were set up to fix in the first place. And they did, for a while. They were set up, hopefully, with some idea of the nature of the chaos that needed to be fixed. Rape, murder, theft, cruelty, starvation, disease, and so on. They were set up, hopefully, by people with a unity of goal, whose efforts were, at least at first, not entirely subverted by selfish personal agendas. They were set up, hopefully, by people who knew what the reality was, who could look directly in the face of chaos and problems and tell the truth about them and work to fix them. They were set up, definitely, by people who were making it up as they went along, who were making what Dr. Peterson calls micro-corrections while working on it all. People comparing what they had hoped would work with what would actually work, and making little adjustments to the system as they went along. Totalitarian, authoritarian societies were springing up one after another right through the 20th century. It seems a frequent occurrence for systems to get hijacked by tyrants, though. But ultimately, tyrants cannot suppress individuality, self-expression, reflection, and inspiration forever. Whether they are Stalinist Russia, Hitler's Fortress Europe, any number of South American, Asian, and African dictatorships, or even a little thing like my rather obscure church culture, this is all readily apparent. What Dr. Peterson went on to describe is very much like what I've been tripping over my own sentences trying to sketch out here. To live a life that has meaning, and which improves the world around you, you need to have your eyes on a higher goal than merely maintaining what is already the established, maintained order of things. Because even the best established order gets old and increasingly doesn't work like it should. It can't handle all eventualities, and eventually new eventualities always arise. And it needs to be kept from becoming anti-life at that point. It needs to be corrected in everything it does that isn't life-friendly. To be willing to see and tell the truth about how things really are within you and in the world around you. People will twist and censor the truth if it makes the system look like it needs to grow or change. So they'll edit their own and others' views of reality to make the system look like it's doing better than it is. You have to be willing to tell the truth anyway. To repeatedly let go of your fondest, most reassuring ideas and dogma, if necessary, sacrificing them to God so that they can be resurrected with new, better life, more suited to what really is the state you're trying to work on. Dr. Peterson sees life as a continual letting go of rigid ideas and systems in order to make upgrades, like someone turning a computer off, changing the memory cards for a new, better, different kind, and then turning it back on to resurrect it as a reborn thing that can now do stuff it couldn't do before. A thing that will need to be upgraded periodically whenever you get your hands on something new, more suited, or necessary in the future. Computers have an operating system like Windows installed on them. But as years go by, the install gets corrupted and unwieldy, needing at least a reinstall, and eventually, a newer operating system to deal with new stuff. In more modern parlance, even apps in a phone periodically need upgrades and bug fixes. The idea is that God does this with us all the time, and we do it with our lives too. And that shutting it all down and tearing it apart because you really have to upgrade it stage can be pretty depressing and scary, but this is necessary for individuals, and it is certainly necessary for things like church cultures. Weirdly, after typing this, I went and watched a documentary about the band U2, which explains why they walked away from the earnest, spiritual, ethereal Joshua Tree sound that made so many of us start listening to them in the first place, and promptly made ironic, beepy, snarky, and electronic stuff that was the antithesis to that successful album. Stuff that lost them some fans, but meant they weren't just trying to repeat the success of the album they'd just done. rather like Radiohead with Kid A. Back in the day, I was very into the Joshua Tree, and was more than a bit bewildered by this odd change in direction with their subsequent albums. In From the Sky Down, Bono says, "You have to reject one expression of the band first before you get to the next expression, and in between, you've nothing. You have to risk it all." That all rings very true to me, but it's quite a journey. It is, without exaggeration, like being born again in a new way. So, why have systems? We recognize what we think of as chaos whenever we encounter nature, stuff we need to control, stuff that's not orderly enough for us. We live in houses with walls and doors, most of us, because we don't want snakes and deer and wild dogs in our kitchens checking out what we're cooking for supper. We don't want ants in our nostrils or bees in our armpits. We want to keep life out to some degree. We want control over what sort of life is in and which sorts are out of what. In the Bible, much of the story starts in a garden, which is, of course, nature not simply being allowed to run riot, but rather growing within a kind of structure or scheme. Gardens have rows, beds, paths, and walls. Gardens showcase life and make it possible to walk around looking at it. I'm thinking of Winston Churchill's huge and ornate garden, tended long after he had died, which I walked through a few summers ago. He's long dead. His garden is still being tended and producing carrots, tomatoes, and flowers, and eggs, because chicken live in a coop there. In nature, creeks, cliffs, stands of trees, bushes, and thickets keep you out, but garden paths take you down them and show you the flowers. Is a landscaped, controlled yard filled with greenery man's natural habitat? Life within a structure? And what is cancer, by contrast? Life run riot, cells dividing out of control and not staying with the plan. Individual cancer cells are life, but they can kill the organism they're growing in. A marriage, a family, a school, a church, a town. These are all systems that we are quite content to use unless a tyrant takes them over and starts stamping out stuff that smacks of life. But human systems are set up by humans. They are founded in and run by the flesh, so they fall short, yet are filled with hubris nonetheless. They demand total loyalty for imperfect results. What happened when Jesus was tortured and executed for not towing the line to the systems of his day tells us an awful lot about this. The cross didn't just show us that God loved us. It also showed us what human religious and governmental systems, as well as the common man, do with people who walk with God. Growing up, the Brethren religious system our ecclesiastical forebears had created was always contrasted with this evil world and its inadequate systems of coping with trouble. This world had things like drugs, adultery, extortion, theft, poverty, famine, AIDS, child molestation, teen pregnancies, and rape, and it was failing to fix them. So never mind UNICEF and the government and the police. You stayed in the meeting. You stayed in at night and off the streets and out of the places of entertainment and limited your time and social movement to that tightly controlled little meeting circle. In turn, it would provide you with everything you needed, which you might otherwise have had to try to get from this world, and ensure that none of those above-mentioned problems touched anyone within the meeting. It was supposed to work like that anyway, this God-pleasing, necessary meeting system within which we lived. Of course, we were encouraged never to view it as a system, and certainly not a man-made, merely human one. Systems were only the natural, flawed efforts of well-intentioned but fallen men. We were plugged into God's stuff. We weren't slaves to man's ideas. We'd been freed by God's. But we actually had all of those above problems among us in some form or other anyway. Being a fleshly system, ours fell short, like any other. And we had a lot of structure. A host of seemingly arbitrary restrictions were part of my childhood from birth. And was my upbringing good? Well, I write to you now as someone who learned to tie my shoelaces and use a toilet, sink, and shower properly, as someone who can read and write and almost do math. I do not go around punching people, wrecking stuff, or stealing things. I'm not addicted to things, and I grew up knowing what the words in the Bible were. By that standard, my upbringing more than did its job. Every child grows up within a system of order, a socializing pattern of some kind. Think about this. Next time you take your sneakers off when you come home and lace them up when you're leaving. It's certainly not all bad. Socialization. For every child, socialization means something important, that they be taught to curtail somewhat their comparatively infinite capacity to enjoy themselves and transgress all social boundaries. Notably, children are taught to be able to turn their natural play impulse on and off the way they are taught to wait until they are in the toilet before they empty their bladders. Children who can't learn to not immediately act upon every single impulse they have end up being excluded from social interaction. They don't learn things. No one wants to play with them either. The thing is to give children what skills they need in order to get by in social situations and systems that are going to be healthy for them. But it's important that children not be abused by any system parents entrust them to. Right into the 20th century, North American residential schools for Aboriginal peoples crushed almost everything that was natural out of Native children. Their names, their language, their stories, and even things like showing affection for or spending time with parents and siblings were simply removed from their childhoods almost entirely. They had everything that would have been natural utterly uprooted rather than, shall we say, pruned, weeded, and trimmed a bit. They were having everything that white people saw as Indian stamped out of them, even connections to their native families. Systems are things we have to live with. We benefit from them, so it's more a question of exactly how they are used. What kind of stuff and how much is squashed out of kids right along with picking their noses in public and wetting their pants at dinner and taking food from other people's plates? Which particular people, with their own agendas, are allowed to tack stuff onto what kids learn, along with the alphabet, addition, and subtraction? The church system I grew up hardwired into wasn't as severe as a residential school, of course. It was my parents stamping out all 20th century Canadian culture I'd picked up at school, rather than my government stamping out an ancient culture I'd started to get from my parents. As a kid, I felt very keenly, however, that I was to a large degree being forced to live under a deeply unnatural, relentlessly joy-killing system. I knew that people were far from candid about exactly what the system was doing or who was driving it. And I wanted answers. I wanted some human accountability. I wanted people to admit, to be clear, out loud, in words, about what was being expected of us. They didn't like being asked this. It was God who was driving, they claimed, so don't ask them much of anything. They were just the messengers. It didn't appear that way to me, especially when, by the time I'd reached adulthood, I knew firsthand that my culture hadn't delivered sufficiently, neither in providing me with what I needed, nor in ensuring that its own weren't touched by the aforementioned world problems. But I'm not saying that children should live with no limits of any kind. I'm saying that my upbringing was 100% about limiting urges and a vibrant life that was never really allowed to happen anyway. Limits can be healthy. So why have structure at all? You need it to have order, to get somewhat predictable and reliable results. You need the madness, and you also need a method to your madness. You need living, energetic kids in your classroom, and you need to make them spend some of their time staying in their seats. You need plant life in your garden, but you need to do some pruning, weeding, and trimming. Jordan Peterson, again, explains that in order to play a game, you have to embrace so very many kinds of limits that the fun is in overcoming them somehow. You win by moving the only chess piece you can sensibly move in the only way you're allowed to move it, and only when it's your turn, thereby vanquishing your opponent and impressing everyone looking on with your ability to work inside that system without breaking a single bit of the structure built into it. It has to be possible, though, to move, to maybe even win. Art works like this also. Jack White, in It Might Get Loud, speaks eccentrically about how much he uses limits, how much he needs to rail against petty technical problems and little obstacles in order to make music at all, let alone good music. For example, he keeps playing old cheap guitars that need to be constantly tuned and fixed when he could easily afford more professional, reliable gear. In his band The White Stripes, he was backed only by a single person playing simple drum parts. He fights with his guitar and sometimes leaves blood on the strings. All this makes his performances what they are. It's not the sound of a confident man casually producing a carefully rehearsed performance on perfectly calibrated gear, the success of which performance is a foregone conclusion. It's not the sound of an incredibly comfortable, laid-back man letting his creativity bubble out of him when it feels ready. It's the sound of a man struggling with and raging against the limits, pushing himself and taking risks, someone trying really hard for you, working to make things work, not phoning the performance in. Struggle can be very good if it's getting you somewhere, rather than extinguishing you utterly. Because good art is often doing what you can, somehow, despite there not being really many choices. I think that's the main reason why so much bad music is being made nowadays. It's too easy. It doesn't cost much, it isn't difficult, and pretty much anyone can do it anytime they want, without taking a lesson. I think this is why George Lucas wowed everyone with his first Star Wars movies, with his crazy battleship model parts glued to ping pong tables lined up in a row, and his cameraman driving by in a pickup truck, leaning out the side window with the camera as fireworks were setting off on cue. The obvious question was, how on earth did Lucas manage to do any of this? I mean, at all. It shouldn't even have been possible for another 10 years or so. Decades later, with a virtually unlimited budget and fantastic array of technical doodads, the obvious question about anything Lucas then went on to create was, you could have done absolutely anything you wanted. Why on Naboo would anyone choose to do what you did? So limits of the right kind can be very good. Limits of precisely the wrong kind, as we sometimes encounter when we run up against a system that wants to control us when we need a bit more liberty, are a serious problem. When should you work within a system set up by other people, and when should you decide to go lone wolf? When you slot yourself into a structure, the important question probably is, what do you want to do? The structure needs to not only allow, but help that. Otherwise, if it's not helping, it's got to go. Especially if it's not letting people grow. I live like this. If you leave behind your Christian system, what are you then? Can you still be a Christian? Can you still follow Christ all by yourself? Doesn't this going forth unto him without or outside the camp constitute a clear disobedience of rules that are in the Bible? I mean, it's got to, right? We can't just be free from the scrutiny of each other, of being accountable to the church of our choice and limited by them, surely? But I live like this. It works. I deal with God. I don't have to ask a pastor if it's okay before I write this. I have not signed a church membership agreement to abstain from alcohol and R-rated films. I serve God rather than any of the myriad church systems out there. I have Christian friends, and we hold each other accountable. We have a community, a network. We have each other, though we live in different cities. Just like any other Christian community, my network includes only some Christians rather than the whole church, unfortunately. But I can tell you that there are limits to what my Christian friends will support and believe in. I am very aware that I am freed by the work of Christ, and I am equally aware that I am very much in the hands of a God who can be angry at times, but I deal directly with him, and I feel that, though my job is different as well as my origins, that I should actually try to live in this world like I think Jesus Christ would want me to, even a bit how he would live himself if he for some reason had my life to live out. But I've been repeatedly told outright by Christians that my job isn't to imitate Christ, because I'm not him, but to follow the leading of a godly pastor at a nice church, because I'm not him either. I disagree. I've never dealt with a church system that does anything but punish and resent me eventually if I get Christ-like in any way which surprises them or does anything but praise and maintain their church system. The thing is, you can set your own limits and follow Jesus based on reading the Bible, praying, and paying a certain amount of attention to your own life and what tends to happen in it. And you can follow Christ without needing to be guided by someone with a title like Reverend or Pastor. If you're finding that other Christians are really not helping, you really can follow Christ yourself. You may find you leave father and mother and pastor to do it. In fact, you might, as I found, actually really need to do that. That it's not working until you do. I think the point of us being down here is to connect to others, but this doesn't mean you might not need to draw away for a time and get your Christianity together a bit before plunging into interactions with them. We're a pretty haggard, odd, contradictory bunch after all, And I think you should interact with us as much outside church stuff as in, to be honest.